Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a Cazsource family production. In this episode, we discuss entrepreneurs, the early days of a business, and how companies came to be.
Win all in, play my cards right.
This is a mashup episode featuring Bobby Samuelson, Derek Bielsma, Mike Vernace, Brian Cockfield, and myself. These guests have all been featured on previous episodes. If you haven't heard them yet, Google Cazsource Podcast and the first name of the guest to find their episode. Let's get right into this one of entrepreneurial stories. This first segment is from life insurance product expert and business owner Bobby Samuelson on how he started and fell in love with his niche.
My dad's been in the insurance business since the 80s. My granddad was in the insurance business since the 60s, but neither of them really ever told me what they did for a living. So insurance was not something on my radar. So I was in college, 2007, had a couple of job offers in the real estate business, thought that I was going to go do that. And I don't know how else to describe it other than that something did not feel right about the real estate market in 2007.
Yeah.
So lucky me.
That's good insight.
It's very good insight. Very lucky. And I was actually graduating a year early from college. So I kind of made the decision to graduate a year early and go into the real estate business. So I ended up actually turning down two job offers from firms that actually later on went bankrupt in the crisis. And finally talked to my dad and said, hey, Dad, what should I do if I'm not going to go into real estate? And he said, well, have you ever thought about the life insurance business? And I said, absolutely not. You know, is that what you do for a living?
Yeah.
But I was an econ major, so I was triple majoring in business, accounting, and economics, and I graduated a year early with just the econ major. And I had a real math background. That was, you know, my favorite part about economics was the econometrics side of it, and my favorite part of that was statistics. And so I went into insurance kind of blind to the fact that I think I had a pretty natural skill set for it, but until that moment when my dad brought up life insurance, it had never crossed my mind.
So you get in the insurance business, right? I mean, so many people say, well, how did you get in the insurance? Well, I kind of just fell into it, or I got tricked into it, or,
yes.
You know, or someone was in the family and they just started, I have to do insurance.
Right.
You kind of went a different route with it. You get into the insurance business. What was it like right off the bat?
Yeah. So like you said, everybody falls in a different way. I didn't fall on the sales side. So I went to go work for, at the time, the largest distributor of life insurance in the country. And I was going to do a rotational program where they would sort of, I was a test case, so they basically said, we're going to make you an intern, and you're going to rotate through, and then you're going to go back and work with your dad and sell life insurance. But we're going to kind of train you on the technical parts of the business before you do that. So my first day on the job, I was in the product area, and I remember sitting down at the computer and pulling up this application called WinFlex, which I'd never heard of before, obviously, and I ran my first life insurance illustration, and I fell in love. And it immediately was apparent to me that these are complicated financial instruments. They're not really insurance policies. There's a lot more to them. And that there was just, at the time, it felt like an unending depth of things to know about when it came to product. And also, it was pretty apparent to me, too, that not a lot of people in the life insurance business were product experts. There was a lot of people who were good at selling it. There was a lot of people who knew how to underwrite it. There were a lot of people who sort of understood the corporate side of it. But people who really loved product and devoted themselves to the study and the practice of life insurance product, that I didn't know many people like that. But that was me. I knew right away that that was what I was supposed to do. And so they kept trying to rotate me through the program. And I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, I don't want to go anywhere else. I am supposed to do life insurance product. And so that's how I got into it. And so I mean, I can honestly tell you from day one, I fell in love with it and really honestly haven't looked back since then.
Yeah, well, I just used the word before, insight. And so you had insight when you walk into the real estate companies. You're like, something's wrong here. Something's not right. I remember walking in actually to mortgage companies because I was getting all these job interviews.
Right.
At the time, I think it was between jobs. And I was like, well, I got a lot of mortgage interview jobs. I must be really ready to do this. And I'd walk in and like, the amount of people in the room, it was like boiler room. And I was like, well, I can get a job here. Then you kind of walk out and you're like, something's not right. I don't know what it is,
right. But
they shouldn't be hiring this many people.
Right.
I actually had a job at DLJ Direct early on in the .com era, and the same thing. And every day there's like new training people coming in.
Yeah.
Didn't seem right. Again, bottom fell out there, mortgage business. So I thought maybe I did have some good insight, but you're taking this insight to the next level when you get into the insurance business. And you're looking at WinFlex Web, and for people that aren't in the insurance business, WinFlex Web is like the main hub to run
Correct. Any
permanent illustration.
Yep.
And here you are, you see it, you love it, and then you take that insight to the next level and say, wait a second, there's no product specialist in here.
Correct.
And I can vouch for that, right? You know, there's someone at an insurance company, they might have a product specialist that knows their stuff, but you're talking about product specialty in the entire marketplace,
Yes. Right? Yeah, and I didn't see anybody in that spot. I also didn't see people who just loved it the way that I loved it.
Right.
You know, there are people who knew about product, but they didn't really. I mean, I was you know, all my friends are still in college, right? I was living in a brand new town. I had no friends. I was not married. I didn't know anybody. And I literally just remember, going to the office on the weekends sometimes just to run the illustrations, just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's how much it captured. I remember dreaming about it. I think most people, it takes, you know, they graduate from college and they're just kind of plugging away. And for me, I became immensely interested in what I was doing. And I think that's, yeah, so I had the insight, but I also had the interest. And that right. kind of, I think for a lot of people, those two
match
things.
Match those together.
Yeah, a lot of people, those two things don't come together. But for me, they came together right away.
Well, that's the true entrepreneur, right? Where you just, whatever it takes, you're going to figure this thing out. Yeah. Even if that means you have to dream about life insurance illustrations, which most people don't do. But what you did is you started creating your own category.
Yeah.
So we can go into the insurance business and you immediately fall into, you're an insurance agent, or the real estate business, you're a real estate agent, yeah. and you're doing what everybody else is doing, but how can you do it differently? So you get into the product space, you start working on it, you obviously love it, which obviously we talk about all the time. You have to have a passion for what you're doing, yeah. hopefully, and happen to be really good at it and have yeah. a skill for it. You get into that business, where does that take you next?
Yeah, so I worked at that company for a couple of years, and then what I realized was that, to your point about kind of being a new category, the category I saw for me was a support structure for high-end life insurance producers. So for people who are not familiar with the space, they think of life insurance salespeople as sort of selling simple term insurance products, maybe. The people we worked with primarily were ultra-high-end life insurance producers, people that you knew from your days, you know, and these guys, they are mostly guys, are selling, you know, very large, complex insurance transactions for estate planning purposes or business planning or whatever. And they're really good at selling, and they're really good at explaining life insurance conceptually. But when it actually comes down to doing the analysis and choosing a policy and designing a policy, they're not great at that. Those are two very different skill sets. And so I saw this new category, which was, why don't I work with these ultra-high-end producers? I'll take a percentage of the commission, and I'll do all the analytical work for them. I'll go visit the client with them. I'll explain why we chose this policy over that policy. I'll find anomalies in the products and help that sort of fit into the planning structure that the advisor wants to use. And so I figured that that would work, and then I quit my job to find out if it would work for real. So I left and started this little company that did that. And I signed up, I think, 7 or 8 kind of big producers to be my retainer clients. And I started working on it. I would basically just get cut in on cases. And so, like you said about new categories, I mean, the new category I was trying to invent was sort of a market for being a product expert, which worked pretty well. Like pretty much right away, I think there was an acknowledgement that, hey, there's not a lot of this going on in the industry. There's just not a lot of product experts. And so these independent producers saw a need for it. And it was an interesting little business model that I started out with.
Yeah, so companies start hearing about this, right? Because now the carriers are starting to get wind. Here you're out doing these yeah. things, and now these other big companies are out there. What is this guy up to?
Yeah.
And you start meeting him probably at events, right?
Yeah.
And you start having conversations with them, and then what happens from there?
Yeah, so I did get a little bit of notoriety because while I was at the insurance brokerage firm, I worked a lot with producers while I was there, but I also became an expert in this product category that nobody knew about and nobody cared about, called Index Universal Life.
Yeah.
Which at the time was like, I mean, they literally gave it to me because I was the intern. And right. No one else wanted to deal with it. But it's an interesting product. It's got a lot of derivatives angles to it. It's a more complex life insurance policy than usual, and so that got me interested, obviously. And so your point, I mean, once I left, I started talking about that product and sort of got asked to speak at one conference about the product, about IndexedUL, and the company started to take note, and I suddenly realized, oh, there's not only can I work with producers on sort of individual cases, but maybe there's a category in this business for an independent commentator on life insurance product, which there wasn't one in the life insurance business. And so when you look at investment management or annuities or other industry, you almost always have sort of an independent voice on what's going on in that business that didn't exist for life insurance products. So I realized pretty early on, that there might be a role for me as an independent voice into the product side of life insurance business. So I spoke at that one conference, somebody at that conference asked me to speak at another conference, and I went to go speak there, and they paid for my travel in my hotel, and someone came up to me afterwards and said, hey, I want you to speak at my conference. What do you charge? And I was like, oh, I can charge to speak at a conference. So I said, I don't know, like maybe $1,000. And he was like, done. By the way, you need to charge a lot more than that. And I was like, oh, this is actually a business. And I had never thought about public speaking as a business. So you kind of fast forward over time, and I ended up doing, you know, hundreds. I think I've done over 500 speaking engagements at all sorts of different conferences in the insurance business. But again, to your point about creating a new category, there was no other person doing that, being an independent voice on life insurance products, and I kind of like fell into that. I didn't realize that there was, it wasn't obvious to me there would even be a niche in how I would make money doing that, but literally I just spoke at a couple of conferences and realized, oh, I can literally make money as a public speaker.
This next part is actually me talking about always wanting to be an entrepreneur, and I take it all the way back to the day I was part of a corporate layoff.
It was what I've always wanted to do. I grew up, my father built a dental practice in Buffalo, New York, and my grandfather, my mom's father, owned a life insurance agency actually in Niagara Falls in Buffalo, New York. So entrepreneurship, you can say, was in my blood. And really, the other aspect of it is I just don't like being told what to do. So I realized at some point in my career, I would have to get into the position where I would be the one as the business owner to be the entrepreneur. And I also knew it took, I would have to put in my time. And I educate a lot of people on making sure that you put in your time. So when you get to that position, that you can finally make that decision to become an entrepreneur, that you've learned a lot. You've gone through these ups and downs. And I think it became a realization to me. My father used to tell me, you're not in charge until you're actually in charge. And a funny story, or at the time it wasn't so funny, but this is what kind of led me on my final journey of wanting to be an entrepreneur, was I was on vacation in Cancun, Mexico, came back and it was a Sunday night. And I'd been working for this large insurance company for a couple of years. And I knew changes were on the horizon, but I didn't think anything drastic. I thought I was next up, right, for the next promotion. And sure enough, I get in, I have these three weird voicemails on my phone. This is when you would check the phone. It wasn't that long ago, but still seems a long time ago. I wasn't checking my iPhone, that's for sure. And these voicemails made it sound like, my company might not be around tomorrow, which would have been Monday. And I told my wife that. And she's like, well, why don't you go to the office on Monday and see what happens? We were newly married at the time. I show up to my office and sure thing, get off the elevator and there's security waiting to escort me to my cubicle. And sure enough, no one else was there except for a small skeleton crew. They escorted me to my desk, had me grab my stuff. I wasn't allowed to get onto my computer, grab my stuff, walked out the door, and that was the end of it. My job was over. And that was a realization that changes were made that I had no control over. Our business was doing very well. A new CEO had come in and just decided, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. We want to make the change. This entire division from top executives down to admin administration was gone. Realized at that point that I really needed to fast track this thing. And this was real. My father, what he had told me was right. I didn't always like to say when my father was right, because like I said before, I don't like taking direction that well, but ended up, you know, finding a new position after a couple different opportunities had come up that I didn't really like. And turned out that I worked at a company for 9 years and really loved what I was doing in the life insurance brokerage world. But again, three significant changes during this time. I thought I was running my own business while I was at this company, until every time they would come in and kind of change your comp plan, change your rules, change all these different things, change leadership. And on the third time, the third significant one, that is, there was many changes along the path. While I built a successful business, I realized this had come to an end. And it simply accelerated or fast-tracked my decision to become an entrepreneur. Again, this had been my goal, my dream all along, to run a business, but I didn't want to just do it because that's what I wanted. I needed to know that I had put in my time, put in my effort, and realized I was ready and had the people around me, which I want to talk about more today, to make sure that when I did make that decision, I was doing it so I could, you know, have the odds in my favor. But that, you know, taking it back to the very beginning of when I was young to going through all these struggles and these ups and downs roller coaster rides, that's what it led for me to become an entrepreneur.
Now we'll hear from Derek Bielsma from Millennium Hope in Chicago, Illinois. Derek is a licensed clinical professional counselor. And in this story, he talks about coming to the conclusion of what he needed to do next.
I had spent some time on a volunteer basis working with people in the recovery community and some other areas. And my wife really noticed that this was what I was truly passionate about. And I would wake up every day and I'd look forward to that side of my life, not so much the business that I was running, but to the part where I was working on a volunteer basis and helping those. So that passion has been there and was really the driver, along with the support of my wife, to move over to this field. And I think that since then, I mean, I truly believe you have to love what you do if you want to be great at it. My belief, even when I was in the recruiting world, was that, you know, you have to find a position and a career that you're going to be passionate about and you're going to love. And I think that you're exactly right. I wake up every day. I look forward to, you know, the different people that I'm going to work with that day and how we might be able to kind of go about this. It's like a big puzzle and you help them kind of solve that puzzle. And then, you know, their life gets better or they perform better or they have less stress or whatever the answer is for that particular person.
Mike Vernes in this segment tells us why his company Shifted came to be. Shifted is a leading educational service for hockey.
The big thing that is going on right now in sports and in a lot of industries is that data is readily available now because we have things like video. We can go back and we can assess things. But at the end of the day, what the data people, sometimes they get over ambitious and they start to think that, you know, the numbers mean more than the human element. And it's just not true. Like, it's both of them together. Like, now that we can have this data, like, it's such an advantage. But we need to understand that there's still a human element. Like, the people that are creating the data are humans. Like, the athletes are humans and they have different things that will affect them on a day-to-day level. So basically, like, something in their emotional well-being, like, if something is emotionally weighing them down, that will affect their performance. You know, they won't be as aggressive, so they're not going to be as confident. And that's going to, maybe if you're talking about baseball terms, maybe you're not going to hit 97 miles an hour on your fastball. You're going to hit 94. And that's a big, big difference. You know, that could mean difference between a strikeout and a home run. Like, that's the kind of stuff that we're looking for. And the context of the whole situation is what we're trying to do. And that's how I think there's a lot of potential for learning for our athletes that we work with. And it is, like, we see it, and when we work with teams and individuals, we see them kind of have these moments where, like, oh, okay, like, and then they look at themselves and then it's not so scary anymore, right? Like, when you're talking about looking in the mirror, like, it's a hard thing to do because it's self-realization. Basically, you're looking at yourself and you're like, okay, this is actually what I am versus what I was telling myself what I am. And it's okay. Like, people are accepting. Like, it's amazing how people work. Like, they generally accept people with all their flaws and everything. But, you know, once you understand that the only way to actually grow in athletics and to get better and to develop is to look at yourself truly, honestly, and then make those assessments. And then when you have coaching on top of that, that can help you understand what you actually need to do, I really think that there's a lot of learning potential there.
In this final piece, Brian Cockfield, owner of the Sports Flooring Group in Charlotte, North Carolina, tells us about his early days leading his company.
When I sat above my garage in 1989, because that's where I used it. It was a two-story garage and double garage. Downstairs was the warehouse, if you will. And I grew into a mini warehouse. And then we grew from there to a small warehouse. But I sat there and I said, okay, God, what am I going to do? Okay, I had a nice Land Cruiser downstairs that I drove all over the place. And I thought, where am I going to end up with all this? And the next thing I know, I get a call from Davidson. And that was the beginning of that relationship.
Davidson College.
Yeah. He passed away several years ago, but Bob Price was the director of business development for athletics. And I became their jack of all trades if they needed something done for the athletic department. Because after Belk Arena was finished, there were a lot of little nickel and dime things that they had sort of forgotten about. Mm-hmm. And so I practically lived on that campus for 5 years.
Yeah.
I could have named myself Make a Living Incorporated.
Yeah. It didn't matter.
I mean, if I needed to go make a presentation, I had khakis and a shirt in the back seat. And or if I needed to work, I had shorts or a pair of blue jeans and a hard hat, I'd go to work. And I wasn't afraid of it. At the same time, I was extremely grateful.
Bobby, Derek, Mike, Brian, you all do incredible work in leading your businesses, and we are so grateful you are able to document your early days for us. From your stories on finding your passion, figuring out the next step, the why behind your business, and the no-excuse attitude, we are all better off from listening to each of you. The perspectives and stories you heard in this episode are now perspectives you as a business leader can use for yourself. And for that, Bobby, Derek, Mike, Brian, thank you. And for anyone looking to learn more, I would encourage you to reach out to these most excellent people. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can find me on LinkedIn or contact me on Twitter and Instagram at Eric_Kaz. Thank you for listening to our KazSource podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. Until next time, we're out of here.
Win all in, play my cards right.
This podcast exists in large part because of KazCM, the content marketing business inside KazSource, Inc. KazCM is excited to bring the content marketing services used at KazSource to you. Learn more by visiting KazCM.com.